the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast is just two guys and maybe a guest or two discussing Bitcoin, Bitcoin equities, and the related macroeconomic space. It's not meant to be financial advice, so please, if you're doing any investing after listening to our program, do your own research, do your own due diligence, and understand that any money you invest can be lost. The show is meant for entertainment purposes only, and we hope you enjoy the program.
Friends and enemies, welcome to yet another edition of the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast. I'm Len. I'll be hosting this one tonight solo. Joey has a night off. Good on Joey. And hopefully he recuperates those Achilles and knee injuries that he's been accumulating over all these years. But before we go any further and bring in our guest, because we'll be talking a lot about Bitcoin mining and mining pools. Mining pools, we really haven't talked very much on this show, at least on an in-depth level. So hopefully we'll be able to learn quite a bit about what's going on behind the scenes. But before we go any further, just wanted to say that we are sponsored by, well, pair sponsors. Number one, EasyDNS. And we're going to be using EasyDNS for our website. I still have to provide my headshot and my bio. And Joey keeps slapping me in the wrist because I'm delinquent in that regards. But EasyDNS is a great place to have your related services for any cast DNS, domain name registrations, web and email hosting. We're going to be moving all our emails over there to their server. And it's going to be a simple translation or migration from Gmail to the EasyDNS side. They're fast, reliable, and privacy focused. And not only that, you could even pay with Bitcoin. So how cool is that? If you apply the coupon code CBPMedia, well, your initial purchase will be 50% off. And Mark Jeftovic sent over this book Unassailable, and I just want to thank him for sending this to me. And included in this, to show you how privacy focused he is, was one of these webcam blockers. So very cool stuff. Thank you very much, Mark, for that. And our second sponsor, of course, is Bitcoin Well, and another privacy focused company where if you do want to buy your Bitcoin at the ATMs, well, all you have to provide is just your QR code for your wallet, as long as it's less than $1,000 per purchase. So you can leave your wallet or your purse at home, whatever that you need to do, even just bring a scanned copy of your QR code or a paper copy, you're good to go. Not just that, online, you can buy your Bitcoin from them with the spreads so low, it's almost negative. Check it out, practically giving it away, just to see the comparison between that exchange and others. But remember, it's non-custodial, so you have to have a wallet before you make the purchase. You have to provide them with an address. Then you could also buy gift cards at Bitcoin Well online with your Bitcoin, gift cards with Home Depot, Sobeys, and a whole other bunch of places. You can even pay your bills with your Bitcoin. So you can live in the Bitcoin standard. We like it. There's some codes you could use. CBP10, you could use that at the ATM, but on every day, not named Monday. On Monday, CBP33. And that will give you a 5% off your Bitcoin. So 5% added Bitcoin bonus, 33% off your the fees, that normal fees that you'll be paying. And online reference code CBP if you're going to be applying or doing a new account with Bitcoin Well. If you do this, use CBP code online and you transact before the end of May, you'll be inputted into a system there where you could potentially get a block lock, a draw by the end of the month of May. With that being said, though, just want to bring in the man of the hour, Mehdi. Mehdi, how are you, brother?
Hey, how's it going? Hello, Len. Hello, everyone who are watching this live or they're watching the recorded version of it. Happy to be here.
Well, thank you very much. Well, we haven't had very much time to even chat behind the scenes. So tell me a little bit about yourself before we go any further.
Sure. Hello, everyone. My name is Mehdi Nasseri. I am the CEO and co-founder of Linkcoin Technologies. We are a Vancouver-based Bitcoin mining software startup. We started in 2021. It was like almost in the middle of COVID. My co-founder and I started experimenting and learning about Bitcoin mining, how it works. We've been Bitcoiners for a very long time, but just on the pleb level. But at that point, we started learning more about the technical stuff. So we started building modules, tools, solutions, and we put them together and launched our platform as a Bitcoin mining pool in September 2021. So it's now about 1 year and 6-7 months that we are out there as a company and a product. But since then, we started to grow and scale. Well, at the beginning, that was pretty slow. You could imagine that was probably not a very good product when we launched it. But we were blessed to have very, very nice users, early adopters who started using the platform, and we scaled from there. And here we are, 2023. It's May, right? Oh my God, it's already May. So
next month is going to be summer in the Northern Hemisphere.
Yeah. So we are growing at a good rate, about like 20% month over month, and we are excited about the future.
Wow. So the adoption rate or the growth rate has not stopped. Like we've had a bear market since September 2021, and it, you know, almost immediately after that, it's been just a downward trend. So with respect to the user, it's been steady growth since you've started the mining pool?
Yes, that's something that we are also amazed about. so even in November, October, when it was like the worst days of the bear market, we didn't lose much of users. I mean, the growth slowed down, but we never stopped growing. And that has happened as part of our strategy, because the way that we started this, we started as a mining pool. We had a really good rate of growth at the beginning. Obviously, it slows down at some point. But the way that we saw it, we saw that, okay, Bitcoin mining space is changing. It's not what it was in 2017, 18, 19. We have to innovate. We have to bring new tools, new features, new technologies. We have to have a new mindset. And that new mindset helped us to bring more people and more users to the platform. I'll chat more about those, but that's how we are trying to keep up with our rate of growth, through innovating on the product level.
Well, before we get into the new tools and new features you brought in, and with respect to the growth, the user growth, is that also matching the hash rate growth that you are experiencing with your pool? Because at 20%, you're saying month over month in terms of growth rate with users, is the hash rate also matching that as well?
Yes, yes. Not only the hash rate and number of users, we are beating the rate of growth of the entire network hash rate. In some other way, I mean, we are faster than the difficulty like decrease. At the same time, I mean, the price of Bitcoin is something that affects us a lot. But anyways, like we don't check price of Bitcoin every day all the time. I see you have that clock behind you. Yeah. We don't have any of those in the office or at home. So
to be honest, I don't really look at it all that much. It's more for a show. The price, I'm kind of oblivious to it for most of the days, because I'm not looking at it as much as I used to. So wherever the price goes, it goes. But let's touch upon some of the new tools and features and innovations you have included in your company to try to attract users. I want to hear more about this.
Sure. We were late to the game, right? So, okay, we are here. We are the tiniest, smallest Bitcoin mining pool that exists. There are so many great companies, great products out there. How are we going to compete? So the only thing that came to our mind was innovations. Hey, we have to innovate. We have to have a new mindset. We have to change how people look at Bitcoin mining. And actually, we were very lucky, because let's say until 2021, Bitcoin mining game was plug a miner, mine Bitcoin, that's it. But since that time, especially like with the big migration from China to North America, Bitcoin mining became a tool not only for securing the network, but also a tool for so many other use cases. Specifically, Bitcoin mining is not a pure Bitcoin game anymore. It is an energy game. So that kind of helped us to define our approach and our product around energy aspect of Bitcoin mining.
So this question I'm going to ask you is going to lead to a second one. The location of Lincoln Technologies, where is it? Where is it located?
Can you elaborate more?
Like, where is it established? Because the jurisdiction where it resides, it might be looking, the people that govern that jurisdiction may look at you and say, because as you mentioned, it's an energy game, and you're the one that's almost consolidating all that energy sort of. And without you being there, it would be hard for miners to do their thing. So I'm wondering if the people that are governing your jurisdiction are looking at you with a keen eye and maybe doing something in the future. So I'm curious, where are you operating out of?
Well, we are a BC incorporated company. So technically, we have to comply with Canadian law and BC law. But as part of our approach and the fact that most of our users are based in US, so we comply with US law at the same time. So that probably answers your question. Yes, the regulators could come forward at any time. We are probably not going to be the first like player in this industry who is going to get regulated, but that might happen at any point. I mean, on the Canadian side, CRA, FinTrack, or even like Securities Commission, at some point they might start asking questions or asking for regulations. That hasn't happened yet. So technically, Bitcoin mining pool business is an unregulated business in Canada so far. Mm-hmm. But that would probably change. I mean, you know what? We are probably the only Canadian incorporated mining pool. That's my assumption. There are others who operate in Canada, but they are like incorporated elsewhere. So that makes it a bit challenging for the government, not for us, because I mean, maybe it's not worth it to spend a lot of time on it.
Well, I'm curious, what was the rationale for setting it up in BC? Because as you mentioned, you were one of the later players that came into this game. So you had an opportunity to at least look at the lay of the land and almost shop for the right jurisdiction. So why did you settle on BC?
So I've been living in Vancouver for over 10 years. So that's my home. That's probably the main reason. But at the same time, like the fact that you are a Canadian company, it gives you a lot of benefits, not only in terms of like Canada being a safe country or a safe jurisdiction, but at the same time, the government support for R&D and technology development. And that was our mindset. I mean, mining pool, there's like a bunch of code out there. You can deploy and run a pool, just do that. But the approach and mindset that we had was mostly on R&D, develop new technologies, create new use cases for this technology. And that's where I think being a Canadian company helps us stand out and scale much faster.
With all these new technologies and development coming in, where do you see Bitcoin mining pools moving in the next, say, 6 to 12 months? Is there going to be systemic change or is it going to be just incremental growth?
Well, 6 to 12 months is probably a very short period of time, but probably like in a longer window, let's say 2 years to 5 years, I would say we will see a lot of change because the behavior of Bitcoin miners is changing. People don't just plug miners in to mine Bitcoin. That is not going to be competitive anymore, or it is not already competitive. Because Bitcoin mining, or the Bitcoin that you earn through Bitcoin mining, is only one aspect of what you do. Bitcoin mining has sub-products and has other use cases that makes it more valuable, and you have to deploy all of those values to make sure that you are profitable and you can make it during like in these like halvings or all these cycles that we are going through. Those use cases could be like heat generation. That is one important sub-product of Bitcoin mining. The other ones are like the flexibility of load and the effect of it on microgrids and electricity grids, as well as monetizing a stranded energy. So these are the main drivers for Bitcoin mining growth in the coming years.
100%. There's going to be so many opportunities to plug in miners and using the waste heat or using stranded energy to power up these miners too. Now, in terms of attracting more users coming to your platform, mm-hmm. to your mining pool, what are you going to be doing? Like, what are you going to be providing them? What incentives? Because there are quite a few out there, and there's some big ones that just have a lot of hash rate that people just know about. What makes Lincoln Mining different enough that it's going to attract a miner to come there?
So Bitcoin mining pool is really not very attractive business. It doesn't have any attractive business model. Why? Because the product itself is not sticky. People can change pools in matter of minutes, right? So you can see mining pool, which is like in the top three, but in 2 days, they might just disappear. Mm-hmm. So that is a flaw that we have identified in this business, and we are fighting with it through creating tools and solutions and defining ourselves as a product which is above and beyond a mining pool. We want to be a platform for intelligence for Bitcoin miners, and pool is one of the elements of that platform. So people define their business based on the tools and solutions that we have. And when you are part of their business, I mean, switching costs would go up, so you would become a necessary piece of that procedure. And then Bitcoin mining pool is one element of that. So that's how we are planning to develop and expand this business.
Tell me some of the challenges there are for setting up a Bitcoin mining pool, because I have absolutely no clue what is this process, what is even step one. So maybe you could run down, first off, how does one set up a Bitcoin mining pool before we get into the challenges?
So running a pool is tough, mainly because, well, Bitcoin is the very first blockchain and the best blockchain. I mean, like the financial blockchain, I mean, the coin. The block rate is not that high. So you have 144 chances to win a block during a day. So for that, well, what you do, you set up the node, you set up the pool, the software, you start like sending work to your users and players. They hash, send back, you make sure that these people are hashing and they're honest to the pool and the community that they're part of. And at the same time, wait for that moment that you find that nonce that solves a block. And once you've got it, you have to publish it. So that's how it works. But in terms of challenges, as I said, you only have 144 chances to win a block. That makes it like the revenue could be very unpredictable. So that's probably one of the main reasons that mining pools exist these days. But even mining pools have that issue. So that fluctuations could add a lot of difficulty for pool operators to make sure that they are able to, let's say, pay their users on time or retain their users.
In terms of like reducing the amount of downtime you have, because downtime mm-hmm. would be absolutely killer for a Bitcoin mining pool. Mm-hmm. Maybe give me a rundown of how much equipment you have, how many nodes you have running, because I know this is very important for mm-hmm. a Bitcoin mining pool. Yeah, give me a rundown of this.
Yeah, so we had a journey in our infrastructure, how we designed it. So we did everything from like all the way from 0 to 100. The way that we designed our infrastructure, we thought at the moment that we started this company, we thought, okay, there is no guarantee that Bitcoin mining is going to remain legal or everybody are going to like us. There are so many haters out there. You might get banned for whatever reason on any level, even like from the data center level, from the government level, just for whatever reason. So one of the first things that we decided to do was to make sure that we don't depend on one single service provider. Our platform is not an Amazon or the AWS or Microsoft Azure platform. No. The way that we designed and managed it, we have four different service providers on the data center level that we use to make sure that we are able to survive most situations. So at the same time, regardless of wherever your location is, if you're mining with Litecoin, your data and your hash rate is being stored at four different locations: North America, Europe, Australia, Asia. We also added a Latin America server recently. We make sure that we store all this data at multiple different locations. If there is anything wrong with any location, we have a copy of what we need. And we have a copy of data on multiple different service providers. So that helps us to make sure that we can serve people. So far, we have had 100% on uptime. Well, that's a good record. We'll try to keep that as is.
My fingers are crossed you maintain that as well. I have one question from the audience. Rand Moore writes in, are you a developer or slash a coder?
I started as a developer. I moved more out to the business side. So a bit about my background. I'm an engineer. I got my master's and PhD from Simon Fraser University in electrical engineering. I've been programming since age of like 14, 15. Mostly on the embedded programming, like microcontrollers, power electronics, power systems. My thesis in my master's and PhD was mostly on like energy management for an automotive system. So I'm coming from that background. My co-founder is more of a DevOps and infrastructure guy. We have four software developers working with us. But I'm more of an architect, my role in the team. I'm the architect and running the front of the business as a CEO, sales, CFO, design, just all those roles. Well, this is a small startup, so we come, like everybody in our team come from a technical background.
Well, you're wearing a lot of hats over there. How many people are in the team?
It's six of us, but we are expanding right now. So that would be a lot more, hopefully soon. It is six of us. It's me and my co-founder, who is the CTO of the team, and four people on the dev team.
Wow. And so then moving forward, I got one question that's related to the halving, because you started in September 2001, so you missed the last one. Mm-hmm. What do you anticipate will happen moving forward with this halving? Is there going to be any technical issues with your mining pool, or is there going to be smooth sailing?
No. We were there when the past halving happened. So we knew what's going on. We even like had nodes running. We're just watching how the blocks like change during that. So we have seen how that changes. For us as a platform, it won't have a huge effect. It's mostly about our users who are gonna probably like lose half of their earnings for a short period of time. But that would probably get fixed after a few weeks based on the past halving. So we will see though, right?
Very cool. I look forward to seeing what happens, not just with your pool, but so many others out there, because this mm-hmm. is going to be a grand event. But I'm curious, in terms of overall hash rate, mm-hmm. what number are you guys pumping out right now?
So we are about like 800 to 900 petahash. We have so many other users in the funnel. So we expect that growth to keep happening in the coming weeks.
And you must have the stats in terms of where, at least I'm hoping you have the stats, mm-hmm. where the hash rate is coming from. And if so, is it more just hobbyists, or is it companies, publicly traded companies, or where do you think it's coming from?
So it's not from publicly traded companies. The hash rate that we have is, we started with plebs, home miners, or small investors, but right now we serve medium to large scale private mining companies. We have some of the publicly traded companies in our funnel to be onboarded the platform in the coming weeks or months. But that's how it looks. Most of our users are from US and Canada. The second region is Latin America, and after that is Australia and New Zealand.
Wow, I'm assuming Latin America because of the cheap energy that's available over there. Australia, exactly. Do they also have cheaper energy? Or is it just because there's stranded energy that they could tap into?
Yeah, the energy is actually pretty expensive over there in Australia and New Zealand. But they are innovative people, so they find the right source of energy, either that is like through self-generation or stranded energy, or playing around with like energy markets.
And based on the stats you see, are you able to extrapolate which type of ASICs are being plugged in to your network, or is that something that's just a little bit too advanced? I mean, are you seeing a lot of the, I guess, newer model like S19 XPs, or mm-hmm. Do you have any idea what's being plugged in?
So we have two main products. One is the mining pool. The other one is the ASIC management platform. So through the ASIC management platform, we know exactly what type of firmware and machine is actually on the platform. Not all of our users use both products at the same time. So some of them use ASIC management, some of them use the pool, some of them use both products. So if you know what's going on in the background, I can say that old gen miners, such as like S9s, there is almost none. There are a few, like even like second generation, such as S17s, M20s. There are minimal number of those. So most of miners are new gens. XPs and M50s are pretty new. So we see an increasing number of those coming online every day. So that's the situation. Even like we have other types too, such as like hydro miners. So we have like pretty much a portfolio of every type of miner on the platform right now.
You talked about the ASIC management platform. Could you please elaborate a little bit more about that?
Yes. So as I told you, the approach and mindset that we have is to actually build an ecosystem of solutions. It's not just a pool. It's about the product and how we actually help our users run their business more efficiently. With that purpose, we started building solutions and products, new solutions and products. It was like August, September last year, like 6-7 months ago. One of the solutions that we built was an ASIC management platform. So any operation or most operations, they're running more than one ASIC. Some of them are running thousands of ASICs. So managing these, monitoring these, and sending command to these miners, that's something that should be done through a platform or software. And that is called an ASIC management solution. That's one of the products that we built during the past few months. That is probably one of the leading products in the market out there for ASIC management right now. We have spent a lot of time on the functionalities and efficiency of the platform. This enables users to manage their ASICs, receive alerts, monitor the metrics of ASICs, temperature, fan speed. And also, they can stop miners, start miners, and underclock and overclock them through the platform. So you'll have an all-in-one experience when you are in our dashboard. You can manage your ASICs, how much energy they use, how much hash rate they produce, what is your earning through the pool. Another element that our platform has is energy market side of things. So this is a new topic. People are learning more and more about it in Bitcoin mining industry. Like until last year, this time, although I'm an electrical engineer, I had no idea how these energy markets function. But the reality is that the power grid that we are connected to, our homes, our factories, our mining farms, it is more like an exchange where people are exchanging electrons. There are producers and there are consumers. And these electrons are being settled at different prices. Just imagine how big this exchange is. Let's just compare that to these crypto exchanges that we are all familiar with. Mm-hmm. This is something similar. People are sellers and buyers. They are buying electrons, trillions of electrons, or let's say trillions of kilowatt hours, whatever. In real time, and that's being settled. So you are part of that market. If you are a residential customer, you get that at a fixed rate, or you receive like your bill on a monthly basis. But in reality, in the wholesale market, that is a lot more like fast, and like the prices of electricity is updated every 5 minutes, and you have the option to buy the power or not, technically. And you can participate in different grid programs, such as demand response, to curtail your energy and get paid because of that. So that's a very complex element that is becoming more and more important in the Bitcoin mining industry. And that is one of the main elements of Linkcoin platform. So we have energy markets, we have mining pool, we have the ASIC management. And on top of all of these, we have a programming language named Rails, which enables miners to program their operation based on metrics from any of these levels to make sure that they are profitable. So that's how we have designed and like built this picture for the Bitcoin mining industry.
I've never heard the energy market framed in that way. That's a really interesting way of looking at it. with respect to that, the wholesale market and demand response, I would imagine, at least in Canada, for the most part, these are provincially regulated, and or are they not?
So we have two unregulated markets in Canada. One is in Alberta, the other one is in Ontario. They are more or less an unregulated market. I mean, they have all the elements as a consumer or off-taker. You can be part of that if you are larger than a certain scale. So technically, yes, you are in an unregulated market, which helps Bitcoin miners actually play a bunch of different games to increase their upside. In the other provinces, that's not the case. Most of the utility companies are crown companies, such as BC Hydro, Hydro Quebec. But they are also moving toward a real-time market. So when you read their documents, they have targets, for example, to switch to real-time energy markets by like 2030. So they have that roadmap, and that is becoming more and more important every day.
And so that programming language you've mentioned, Rails, is that also part of the ASIC management solution?
Yes. So here's how it works. As I told you, there are three elements: energy markets, ASIC management, and pool. Based on, let's say, the real-time price of Bitcoin or real-time price of hash rate, you can program your operation to scale down when the price is above a certain level. Or based on the metrics from energy markets, you are sourcing your energy from energy markets. If the price of electricity is higher than a certain scale, you will have the option to scale down or scale up based on those metrics. That's the easy use case of Rails. It's getting more complicated. We have some new products and solutions to help people actually protect their profit margins in real time. So that Bitcoin mining is becoming an energy brokerage game, that you buy energy in real time, sell compute power in real time, and you get paid by the most valuable currency in the world, which is Bitcoin. I'm very excited for that day to happen. That we're not too far from there. It's somehow happening, but that's going to be very cool.
I'm not sure if you heard about this. I'm thinking you have, but if not, Ontario recently released a new ultra low energy rate in the overnight, and for people that want to opt in, it's, I believe, around 2.5 cents per kilowatt hour for between the hours of, I don't know, 12 and 7. I forget what it is exactly. Have you been approached by anybody in Ontario to take advantage of this, given the fact that you have this Rails programming that could throttle things up and down given on how much the price of Bitcoin is and the price of energy? It seems like it's a no-brainer for a lot of people in Ontario to take advantage. So, yeah, have people reached out to you from Ontario?
Yes. So we have a bunch of users from Ontario. I believe that new rate became effective May 1st. Something that I recently learned was that is just the price of electricity. There is other charges to that, such as like delivery charges or all those charges that the utility companies have. But that is still very affordable. So the consumer price will probably be in the range of 4 cents per kilowatt hour Canadian dollar. When you convert it to US, that would be like less than that. That makes a lot of obsolete Bitcoin miners devices, to become profitable again. So people are using Rails to take advantage of that ULO pricing. So they just switch miners on at 11 p.m., switch those off at 7 a.m. For heating purposes, they heat their homes, but they also get paid, which is awesome. Why not? Yes. That's one of the very simplest use cases of Rails. So, and they get paid through FPPS rewarding that we offer. So kind of they know how much they're going to earn for that period of time.
And do you also provide new firmware or operating system for the ASICs themselves, similar to what Brains does? And if so, which ASICs are you doing it for?
So technically, as a platform, we are trying to be firmware agnostic. So we are open to work with any firmware provider. We have a firmware partner, which is CryptoMine. They're also a Canadian company. They provide firmware for S19s, just similar to what Brains supports. So people can use that firmware to actually manage their operation or optimize their hash rate, underclock, overclock. That is 100% compatible with our platform. So people take advantage of that deal a lot.
I'm going to ask you a technical question to do with your pool. And hopefully you could dumb it down for somebody like me. I believe you are a FPPS server. Explain what that is and how this differs from the other ones, like the PPS, PPLNS, and PPS Plus.
So there are three main payment methods in Bitcoin mining industry. One is PPLNS, PPS Plus, and FPPS. PPLNS is the original like payment method. How does it work? The mining pool only pays the miners whenever a block is mined. There is zero risk on the pool side. There is all the risk on the miner side. People did not like that. So they started offering something called PPS or pay per share. PPS itself did not include transaction fees because transaction fees was negligible at the time. But once they were introduced or they become like more and more important in terms of the their value in the miners' revenue, people introduced PPS Plus. So they distributed the pools, distributed the block reward, which was, let's say, 12.5 at the time. It is 6.25 right now, through PPS method. Based on the probability of winning a share, you receive that amount of Bitcoin for the block reward part. And for the transaction fees, they share that transaction fees whenever the pool mined a block. So that was method number two. The third method, which is FPPS, first introduced probably like 2016, but became more and more popular. Right now, most of the Bitcoin network are using FPPS. And that was the most feasible way for us as a small pool that was scaling up. Using FPPS, there is no risk on the miner's side. All the risk is on the pool side. So the pools guarantee the value of the compute power or hash rate at the probability of winning. So you get paid for block rewards and transaction fees to the maximum of your potential of winning the block, regardless of the pool success. So that's how it works. There are other payment methods being introduced. We are working on one right now. I won't ruin the story, but that's probably happening in a month or two. So that's also improving.
I look forward to seeing that. It's going to be excellent. Now, I have, I guess, a couple more questions before we sign off. There's been a recent spike in transaction fees in Bitcoin. Everybody's looking at the mempool or mempool, depending on how you say it. What are your thoughts about this? How does this impact miners and pools?
We love them, right? yesterday it was like we had a lot of transactions coming to the mempool. I've heard most of them are because of this BRC20 that was recently introduced for fungible tokens based on ordinal theory. But that added somewhere around like 20% to the miner's revenue for yesterday. As a miner and as a company or as a person who is serving miners, that is something that we love to see happen more and more. That might affect a small Bitcoin miners into some extent. Why? Because, well, they earn more money, but at the same time, the mining pools, such as us, we might have to increase our payout threshold because those transaction fees that we have to pay to send out those payments might become more than the actual fee that we receive from small users. But, well, it's not there yet, but that's one of the potential consequences of it for small miners. But in general, that's something awesome.
And since you're here, what are your thoughts on ordinals as a whole? And also, there's been in the past some out of band payments that were done to mine a specific block. So what are your thoughts on all that?
So ordinals, I like them because of two things. One, that is an off-chain agreement between people to trace sats. That does not affect the mainnet. Bitcoin functions no matter what, and that doesn't have any that doesn't cause any issues for the actual layer one. So that's one reason that I like it, because even if that's something that is going to fail for whatever reason, that's not going to have any effect on the actual Bitcoin network. The second part is that that is bringing more utility to the Bitcoin network. I understand that is an off-chain agreement, but once that off-chain agreement to trace or track single sats become more and more accepted by more people, that becomes part of the platform unofficially, right? So that is bringing more utility. More utility means more use case for mempool and more use case for block space. That means more revenue for Bitcoin miners. We are passing halvings one after another. Let's say in 40 years, 50 years, the block reward would probably be very small based on the price of Bitcoin for sure. But that's a good thing that people are starting paying for that block space that they are using. And that's a cool thing. Regarding the out-of-band payments, I mean, you know what? This is an open and permissionless protocol. We can't prevent people from doing things. They can do whatever they wish. We can just ask people that, hey, don't do this, but we can't block them, right? So out-of-band payments, they might be cool, but I think they have effects on the miners as a whole, if regardless if they are PPLNS or if they are FPPS. If the pool that does it is a PPLNS pool, that would probably has a very big effect on their users, because technically the users has no way to audit their earnings, and
they gotta trust, not verify.
Well, technically, if you are doing PPLNS, you have to trust to some extent, because the pool reports their hash rate, and you have no way to measure their hash rate. So technically, you have to trust without verifying. But again, that's another layer of not trusting. I mean, trusting and not verifying. If that is a FPPS pool, they can do that out-of-band payment. But the outcome of it would affect the entire, like, overall transaction fees average in the past 24 hours. So that will still have an effect on users in overall. And my assumption is that, you know, this is a very simple game theory. If you are part of a pool, you know that the pool is actually charging for that block space, and you don't know how much is it, you start to feel a bit suspicious about it. So that would probably fix itself, because people will leave the platforms who does it and join the platforms to offer more transparency. On a side note, me as a person, I believe mempool is the most feasible and the most transparent market for block space. So people are technically bidding for block space using their, like, transaction fee that they offer for their transaction. And that is awesome. That is the most transparent, most competitive way to auction block space. So that's my mindset on that.
So I take it you have not been approached by anybody to take an out-of-band payment to mine in Ordinal.
No, we are not. We haven't, but that's also our mindset and approach. We think mempool is the way to go.
Fair enough. No, that's an interesting way of looking at it. So I guess I have one last question. With respect to mining pools moving forward, do you expect there's going to be a lot of consolidation moving forward, or there's going to be more new players come into the game? Because I'm not sure... you know better than anybody else how lucrative it is, but how expensive and time-consuming and how much time and effort you have to put into setting one up. Do you think there's going to be more smaller pools set up in the future, or there'll be some consolidation and there's just going to be like the banks in the U.S. and we'll just have a few of them in the end?
Well, just like any other industry, for sure there will be some incumbent players. So in any industry, such as banking, even steel industry or farming, that's what happens, right? So Bitcoin mining pool industry will probably follow the same pattern. But at the same time, the industry is changing. So let's say the biggest mining pool in the world, which is Foundry, they have started charging fees. They have been like offering 0% pool fees that make it very uncompetitive to play. Right now with this new fee structure, we will probably see more competition in this space. And you can expect like smaller pools to grow bigger, and let's say Foundry stay at the same range or grow at a slower rate. So So that's a good thing that happens that helps decentralization process. But the smaller players or new players, for sure, because this industry is actually evolving, and that's pretty new in North America, I would say. So before that, it was minimal. Like, most of the hash was coming from China. So we will see more players come in, but at the same time, they probably can't survive without being innovative. So you can't be offering the same product and the same technology and the same offering that people were offering in 2016 and expect to survive and scale.
100%. Now, I always say that you have three different options. You can either be better than your competition, worse than your competition, or different than your competition.
Yes. So
two of the three are good, but different is probably the easiest one to make a reality. So thank you for coming on. Before we sign off here, I just want to hand you the baton and just tell everybody where they could reach you. You have any questions, Lincoln Mining, to talk about where they could reach that. So the floor is yours to just chill your stuff.
Yeah, thanks, Don. So people can find me very easily on Twitter and Telegram. We have a Telegram community of miners, and we are chatting there all the time. So if you're hearing this, feel free to join our Telegram chat. You can find the link on our website, which is linkedin.com. And you can find me there. I'm very approachable, 24/7 almost. I sleep like 6 hours, but I sleep that in like two separate parts. I sleep like 4 hours during the night, 2 hours during the day. So you can expect a reply in like less than 4 or 5 hours as soon as you message me.
You are a night owl. Just keep going. I like that. But I guess you have to be, given the fact that you're such a small team. You said six or so on your team. So yeah, good for you. So everybody out there, thank you very much for tuning in. And on Monday, we'll do our regular rip. So hope you all tune in for that. So, but until then, everybody take care, PV, and enjoy the rest of the day.